So I'm a lay practitioner. I'm not a priest, and I find it most important that we incorporate this practice into our lay lives. We're a lay group. We're not a monastery, and so to bring this practice up off the cushion and incorporate it into our lives, realize it in our lives, and allow it to be realized to us out of our lives, to be informed by life itself. And so, accordingly, I offer a story from my life that that spoke to me, and maybe it will mean something to you. It has to do with gardening. I am fortunate to live in a place where the soil and the sun are just so that flowers fairly leap up out of the ground, and it's very rewarding to garden there. But there's one corner of the yard back in the very back, sort of up a little slope, that is very heavily shaded by the neighbor's trees. They all hang over the fence there. And it's also very damp. There's a kind of maybe an underground stream or just a very high water table. So anytime it rains, the water comes to the surface, and if you walk barefoot, it squishes up between your toes. And so it's challenging to find anything that can live there. This is tough on plants to be in a place that's that wet. They like a little oxygen around their roots. But there's a short list, and a lot of them are native plants, and so I've gone about finding what I can and trying them out there, seeing what can tough it out. And one of the plants that fit the criteria is something that's commonly known as spice bush. And because there are a lot of plants that have similar names like that, I tend to think of it rather as its genus name, which is Lindera. And the Lindera bush, reason it's, well, it's not the reason it's called spice bush, but it serves as the host for the spice bush butterfly. It's one of a swallowtail for the larva. And so I imagine it, with butterflies all over it, although actually it'd be caterpillars, but still. It grows about 6 or 8 feet tall. It likes to grow in wet and very shady places. And in the fall, it has this lovely golden color, or so I understand from looking at pictures of it. And so this spring I set about looking for a Lindera or a few that I could plant there. And I went around to all the nurseries and I asked them, did they have spice bush, this Lindera benzoin? And each one scratched their heads. Nope, don't think so. I haven't heard of anything like that. It's a native plant. Sometimes they carry them. And I know all the nurseries. I'm very big on this gardening thing, so I went to quite an array, and it simply wasn't to be had anywhere around. And so there's this stretch of woods at the bottom of the hill on the road where we live. The road ends at this woods, and then there's a walkway that goes through it, just a sort of gravel path where the neighborhood children can go through as a sort of shortcut to get to the elementary school. And it's a lovely walk back through there. Actually, it's sort of swampy, as a lot of places are in New England. It's glacial leftovers, I guess. But anyway, so it's very swampy and woodsy and lovely for a walk. And my husband and I go walking back there not infrequently. And when we go, I keep an eye out for interesting plants. So if there are many of them, I feel free to dig up a few and bring them back to my garden, which is also a bit swampy and, like what's there in the woods. And so I've found lots of ferns, beautiful, wonderful ferns there, and meadow rue and Joe Pieweed and various lovely hollies. I haven't dug up any of those, but they are back there. And so whenever I would walk through, I would look for this Lindera. And I would look and look and could not find anything that was remotely like what I had seen pictures of and read the descriptions of, nor even a spice bush swallowtail that might lead the way. So This intense hunt went on all summer, and the more I couldn't find it, the more I was certain that this was the plant that I needed in order to complete the garden, that it was going to be the winner in that corner. If only I could lay hands on it. But alas, it was not meant to be, and so finally I just gave up and decided that, well, probably it wasn't any good anyway. So the fall came, and one day I was at home, and it was one of the many lovely fall days we had this year. So there were so many that were clear and warm. We didn't have much rain, and the foliage was particularly marvelous. And so I went for a walk back in this woods on the walkway. And of course the maples, you know, they were just all different mapley colors, and the beech trees were beginning to turn golden, and the wind was rustling them. It was just a lovely, lovely fall day. And the whole understory in this swampy woods was this beautiful golden color. It was just, you know, radiant. And so as I'm walking along, I began to wonder about these understory plants. And there was a place where I could get up a little bit close to one of them and examine the foliage and I would try to fix it in my mind so I could go back and find out what it was. And as I looked at it, I had this funny suspicion that these beautiful gold plants that were all around me for as far as I could see were Windera. And of course they were. They had been there all along. I just had it in my mind what they would look like. And when they didn't look like that, I was sure that they were nowhere to be found. Nope, couldn't be anywhere near here. But there they were, all around. And the funny thing is that once I realized that that there were just, you know, hundreds of these lovely Lindera bushes, I didn't so much feel the need to have one of my own. They were there all the time. It was fine. So I find myself, as I go about my life, wondering if a lot of my life is that way, that when I find myself in a situation, let's say where there's someone rather obnoxious sitting next to me in the subway, or what I ordered at the restaurant turns out not to be very tasty, or, you know, whatever life's many irritations, if perhaps this is actually like the Lindera bushes. Am I actually surrounded by Lindera, but it's just green at this time? Or maybe it's just the bare stalk coming out of the swamp. But nevertheless, the very same bush that has golden leaves. And so as I was thinking about this, I, for whatever reason, related it to a koan that we have in our koan collection, Mumon Khan's, not ours, it's a koan collection, the Mumon Khan, the Gateless Gate. And that is case 19, Ordinary Mind is the Way. As I was thinking about including it in tonight's talk, I realized that I've actually given a talk on this koan before. And since I've given a talk on very few koans, it's odd that I would pick out the same one again. And so I thought maybe I shouldn't, but then I decided I would anyway, because it's not such a bad thing to have a look at the same koan over and over. We do that in our retreats, and we do that for Ango, although those aren't koans. And it's interesting to look at it from many different facets. So here's facet number two. First, I'll read the koan through, and then we'll go back and have a look at it more closely. Joshu earnestly asked Nansen, "What is the way?" Nansen answered, "Ordinary mind is the way." Joshu asked, "Should I direct myself towards it or not?" Nansen said, "If you try to turn toward it, you go against it." Joshu asked, "If I do not try to turn toward it, how can I know it's the way?" Nansen answered, "The way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is blank consciousness. When you have really reached the way beyond all doubt, You will find it is as vast and boundless as the great empty sky. How can it be talked about on the level of right or wrong? At these words, Joshu was suddenly enlightened. So a word about Joshu and Nansen, also known as Chaochu in Chinese and Nanchuan, or at least my version of Chinese. They were actually both turned out to be two great teachers in the sort of golden age of Chinese Zen. Nansen was for a long time a hermit and lived up in the mountains alone, but was finally persuaded to come down and take over a monastery very late in his life. And while he was there, and he became one of our great teachers. In fact, I noticed there's a picture of him, or at least a depiction, let's say, around the corner here on the wall in one of the koans that he's known for about a cat. And so he had a student named Joshu. Joshu became a great teacher in his own right, although his methods were much more gentle than Nansen's. He became known as the teacher who he used words. He didn't hit his students. You know, we have a lot of koans where the students are being hit compassionately, of course, to bring them out of their thinking mind. That was not Joshu's way. He preferred to offer words, and it seemed to work very well, at least when he did it. But in this case, Joshu was still a student early on, and so he earnestly asked Nansen, "What is the way?" And of course, this is the sort of inquiry that is the precipitating event in bringing us to Zen practice or to any sort of spiritual practice. This inquiry that rises up from us. What is this that we? What are we here for? Who are we? What are we meant to do in this life? What is this? I hear about this. That life is perfect and all is just as it should be, and yet that's not how I experience it. What is this way? So we can honor Joshu for asking for all of us from his teacher. And Nansen answered, "Ordinary mind is the way." I can imagine that this was not particularly satisfying. I know it wasn't to me when I first heard it. Because it seems as though if ordinary mind were the way, we would already know the way. I mean, we certainly live our ordinary lives, and you know, we've been with them for years and years, and it's just not obvious to me how ordinary mind would be the way. Surely there's something else. Surely there's some other out there that we can go and get, that we can find. And so Joshu was not one to be easily put off, and so he asked a little bit more information. He said, "Should I direct myself towards it or not?" And it's not an unreasonable thing to do. I mean, we do read before we come here. All of us have probably read about Zen practice and perhaps other practices as well, perhaps tried them out. There are things that we can do to direct ourselves toward what we imagine is the way. Much as I did with the Lindera bush, I had an idea of what it would look like and I directed myself toward that. And it was a necessary part of my search. I had to exhaust all the avenues, right? And so Joshu was deeply involved in that. And so Nansen said, "If you try to turn toward it, you'll go against it." Well, really, any turning toward or away from is beside the point. What are we turning toward? What do we imagine is there that we can turn toward that's other than what we already have? I was in the midst of all those bushes all along, but I was sure that I needed to go somewhere and find it, order it from a nursery, find it somewhere. And whatever we turn toward is our idea of what it should be. And so nonsense pointing to this, any movement away from where we are is moving away from where we need to be. So Joshu asked, if I do not try to turn toward it, how can I know that it's the way? And I wonder, is the trying to turn toward it an essential part of the process? If I had not been searching for those bushes, how would I have known when I finally did see them? And I had an idea. I only knew one part of it, the part where they look golden and they grow out of the swamp. And so that was my idea of what I was looking for. And if I had not had that idea, I wouldn't have recognized them when they finally did show up. So it was not a bad thing. But now that idea can be let go because I can recognize them in all their other guises as well. When they have their insignificant flowers in the spring, I'll know that also is the Lindera bush. When they come out with their ordinary green leaves for the summer, I won't be fooled. I know that they are Lindera. And then, of course, in the fall with their lovely leaves and then dropping them and standing up bare sticks in the mud, still totally Lindera bushes through and through. So Joshu asks rightly, if I do not try to turn toward it, how can I know that it's the way? And Nansen answers, the way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is blank consciousness. So what does he point to, knowing? If it's not knowing, if it's not knowing, what's left? Of course, if we sit in this moment and wonder about it, we're already where we need to be. And as soon as we try to know what that moment is, we can only ever know what's already happened. In the moment that it's happening, we can't know it. And this is not the not knowing of pushing something down, repressing it, or blanking it out. It's the not knowing of being fully part of it. So much so that thinking about it can only come later. The sort of thing that we do when we embrace a loved one. We don't have to think about it in the midst of it. We just do it. And then afterwards we know that something was done. And so Nansen is pointing to that moment before we know, or before we try not to know, when we are simply fully part of it. He says, when you've really reached the way beyond all doubt, you will find it is as vast and boundless as the great empty sky. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong? Dogen Zenji, I came upon this quote today, says, when you release it, it fills your hand. It fills the whole universe. I had many ideas ahead of time about the Lindera bushes, but in the meantime, they were going about their business of blooming and growing their leaves, turning them golden and dropping them. It really didn't depend upon my ideas in order to be fully there and manifesting in this world. It's quite a relief to know that it doesn't depend upon my views. At these words, Joshua was suddenly enlightened. Please let's not have too many ideas about what that is either. And I'll finish with Mumon's verse about this case. The spring flowers, the moon in autumn, the cool breezes of summer, the winter snow. If idle concerns do not cloud the mind, this is man's happiest season.